DC Comics Podcast, episode number 11. I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
Dude, I am so happy, man. I'm doing great, man. You know, we've got a live-action Justice League movie. It's a dream come true, and I am happier than Robin when he found the Batcave in the Lego Batman movie. I just got back this weekend. I was seeing it up in North Carolina at one of the Batman on Film watch parties. So shout out to Ryan Haas who hosted it, and I got to meet a bunch of fellow BOFers in person for the first time. People I had chatted for forever online, and to meet them in real life, it was great fun to see the movie with those guys. So, man, I am riding on a Justice League high right now. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. You said you were as excited when Robin found the Batcave in Lego Batman movie.
Yeah, that's a pretty apt description.
Well,
yeah.
Please, for our listeners' sake, and for the entirety of Atlanta where you're situated, please keep your pants on. Unlike Robin, Jordan gave it away. We're going to be reviewing Justice League, which I went to see right here in Toronto because, unfortunately, making it out to one of those BOF watch parties wasn't in the cards this time around. Maybe for the Batman, I might make a trip or something. That's certainly in the cards. But for this one, I just watched it with a really good friend of mine. We always watch these movies together. And we were both very happy overall with what we saw. But to help us discuss this first ever live-action Justice League movie, we have a guest. And this time I'll introduce the guest. He's a longtime friend of mine. And co-host when we were doing Simply Superman Batman podcast. He is the founder of the Superboy homepage, and his efforts are a large part of the reason why the Superboy television series is on DVD, and that is Sam G. Rizzo. Sam, welcome to Multiverse Musings.
Thanks, Adam. That was a great intro. I want to cry now.
Well, this, Kevin Smith, leave that for Kevin Smith's podcast. When he invites you on that one, I'm sure the email is waiting in your inbox. What's that?
I gotta check my inbox. Yeah. But thank you guys for having me on tonight. This is gonna be a lot of fun.
And it really is a multiverse because you know the previous podcast and the new one, you know, colliding. So.
It's so cool because I was a listener of Simply Superman Batman and so I was a fan of you guys before and now to be here and bring you on our new show, Sam. It's sort of like being on an old episode with you guys of Simply Superman Batman, so it's awesome.
And you know, I can pretty much count the five people. It's
oh my God.
Because remember, I used to say five people listen to our podcast, and it's Jordan is one. Uh-huh. Stephen Marshall is two. Uh-huh. Ben Rush is three. You listen to the playback, so that was four. And I'm gonna guess my mother listened to one of them, so there's five. And there we go. But now that I've done the tracking on that,
wow. You did the countdown to how many listeners we had.
It's more sophisticated than box office tracking, I'll tell you that. No, actually, it's not. But before we get into our review, as we always do, there's some news items to run down. Jordan, there's an update. There's a news update regarding the Black Lightning television show, correct?
sets that we finally have. I know you've been, you know, banging the drum for all these. We've got all these DC TV shows coming out soon, and you've been banging the drum for us to get some release dates, Adam. Yeah, yeah. And we finally do for one of them, and that would be Black Lightning, mm-hmm. and it is coming on January 16th at 9 p.m. So it is following up The Flash. It's taking Legends of Tomorrow's spot. Legends is not coming back when the rest of the Arrowverse shows come back. It's apparently going to get a new night a little bit later. But yeah, Black Lightning is getting a Flash lead-in. So that, I'm thinking, will probably help it. And it is getting a, the 9 p.m. slot, which makes me think, you know, Arrow got a 9 p.m. slot this year. It makes me think that Black Lightning seems to be another grounded show, sort of like Arrow is. So maybe the 9 p.m. slot will be good for it, because that means they can get away with a little bit more than maybe they could get away with at the 8 p.m. slot. No. But yeah. I'm really excited about this. We finally got a release date, and really, it's less than 2 months away. So I'm really excited about this show. How about you guys?
I'm actually excited about it too. But you know what would really, I think, help the ratings? Since it's paired with The Flash. You know how Black Lightning has like his kids, and there's a hint in the trailer that they have superpowers.
Yeah.
So clearly, there's going to be a Team Black Lightning kind of thing, right? With Black Lightning and his two daughters. And so, you know, eventually down the line, I'm thinking, since it's paired up with The Flash, what they do is they have Iris West come on. See, like, because eventually Team Black Lightning is going to have a lair or like a base of operations. They should have Iris West go to that base of operations. And as Black Lightning is like, you know, about to head on a mission, she should stop him and his daughters and say, "You aren't Black Lightning. We are Black Lightning." That'll be amazing. Fantastic.
I saw that coming from a mile away, Adam.
He laughed. You totally telegraphed that one. Wow. I've only seen a little bit of the trailers that they put out there for it. And I'm not familiar with the character Black Lightning all that much. So, but it looks interesting. It looks like another series very much in the vein of Arrow. And I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up in like, not this year, but next year's Fortnite crossover event, which, I mean, this year's event looks amazing. But
yeah, it looks fantastic.
But I'm sure you guys will talk about that in another episode. But I'm very excited for another.
I think it's the next one after this, isn't it, Jordan?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I'm very excited for another DC TV series. Any way to expand this whole Arrowverse? Is that the right terminology?
Yeah,
for
yeah, yeah. It's a lot better than Flarrow.
The Arrowverse.
Because Arrow started.
I really like that they're expanding it, and with Black Lightning and whatever other television series. I'm sure there's going to be more in the near future. How about a Superman series with Tyler Hoechlin? I know you have ideas, Adam, where that's going to end up if they ever do it.
The other bit of news, you know, by the way, so look out for Black Lightning in the new year. And now all we need is a release date for Sci-Fi's Krypton. Right. And I'd be happy. But moving on to the DC digital streaming service, we have news about that. And it's not news regarding Young Justice, though we know that's coming. We don't know when. A release date, again, would be nice. We know that Titans, the live-action show, is coming. That's filming, I believe, either they've started or they're close to starting filming on that, because they're filming here in Toronto, from what I understand. Again, no release date on that, or when the heck this streaming service is going to kick off, or the prices. So Warner Brothers, anytime you want to drop that info, it'd be appreciated. But they've announced another addition to the service, and that is a 26-episode animated series, an adult, by adult, I don't mean pornography, I mean adult as in, you know, toned. adult-toned animated series centered around Harley Quinn. Now, the series, to my understanding, is going to be, at least the first season, will be 26 episodes. It's going to feature other villains and heroes from the DC universe, right? Apparently, in the little blurb that I read, it is going to feature a Harley Quinn who's finally broken away or broken up with the Joker. And she's going to be concentrating on becoming the, you know, the queen of the criminal underworld in Gotham. And one of the things that has me most excited, apart from the fact that a whole 26-episode animated series based upon Harley Quinn, is that my Earth 2 wife, Margot Robbie, will be or is being courted by Warner Brothers to voice the character. To, of course, she starred as Harley Quinn in Suicide Squad, and she is being eyed by Warner Brothers. She's a top choice to voice the role, reprise the role. So I'm very excited about that. The only thing that gives me pause, but I don't blame this on them, is that it's the it's from the creators of Powerless. Is that, did I read that right, Jordan?
That is correct. Well, it's from the creative team. So yeah, Justin Halpern, Patrick right. Schumacher, and Dean Lorre.
Now listen, I'm not gonna mince words. Powerless was a piece of crap. But I don't necessarily blame that on the creators. I the idea was stupid. The best episode was the one with Adam West, God rest his soul. The title sequence was cool with the comic pages, like the retro comic pages. That was cool. But the rest of the show was garbage. The concept was flawed, and so I'm not gonna hold that against them. The only pause, the other pause aside from the thing, so I'm gonna go in with an open mind there. The only other pause that I was given, you said one of them is named something Schumacher. Anytime the name Schumacher and Gotham are together, I get a little bit, you know, I get PTSD whenever that happens. So,
it's spelled differently, if that gives you any.
Well, okay, good. So it's the Bizarro Schumacher. That's good. I'm glad. That's the good news. But the best news is it's centered around Harley Quinn, and it may star the voice of, again, my Earth 2 wife, Margot Robbie. what's your feeling on this, Sam? What do you think about this idea?
Well, I think it's great because she was the best thing out of Suicide Squad. And to expand her character into an animated form and to get to have 26 episodes to get to know this version of Harley Quinn as opposed to the animated series Batman, which was amazing. But just to, like, expand her world and expand who she is in animated form as opposed to having a live action movie, which is also great, I think you're gonna get more fans to the character. So I think it's only gonna be positive. And especially if Margot Robbie's involved voicing the character, because she's made Harley Quinn her own with Suicide Squad. So I think it's gonna be really, really exciting, and it's another thing that people could look at. And when you're deciding on if you want to spend the money on that digital service, this is something you can't get anywhere else. So, I mean, if it was me, I would spend the money and watch the animated Harley Quinn series when it comes out. Right, so, yeah, I'm very, very excited.
Cool. Jordan, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I'm really excited too. I first want to start off by saying I don't even if Margot Robbie winds up voicing Harley in this, I'm not sure that it's intended to be set in the, you know, DCEU necessarily with that version of the character. It could be something more like what Matt Ryan, he voiced Constantine in the Justice League Dark animated movie, but that wasn't set in the Arrowverse like his live action series retroactively was. So it could just be her, you know, reprising her role in a different universe. But in any case, it is really exciting. I thought she did a great job in Suicide Squad. If they don't wind up getting Margot Robbie, I will say that my first choice would be to bring back Melissa Rauch, because I thought she was phenomenal in Batman and Harley Quinn. I'd love to see her get another go at voicing the character. You know, Adam. I gotta disagree with you. I loved Powerless. I thought it was sort of a brilliant show. It was.
Of course,
it
had you did. I'm not surprised by this at all.
it had so much it had so many Easter eggs for DC thrown in, but not only that, but I actually found it, even apart from that, I found it to be a hilarious show. So I it gives me a lot of confidence that the same creative team is involved in this. And I really feel like, I feel like they got the really, I thought it was unfair how quickly that series ended. I have no trust in NBC anymore at this point after what they did to Constantine, what they did to Powerless. So I'm glad that these guys are getting another chance to sort of do something in the DC universe with this Harley Quinn animated series. We got a little bit of development art by Amanda Connor, of course. One of the people involved in the I'm not reading the current writer, or because she writes and draws the Harley Quinn book right now with her husband, or
I thought at one point Palmiotti was writing it, but I could have it mixed up. All I know is that that creative team is leaving the book and some other team is coming on, so okay. That'll be interesting.
In any case, okay, she did do the art for the development art for this series, and this is not confirmation of anything, but I thought I'd point out some of the other characters that are in this arc because it, you know, could give us some idea of who might appear in the show.
Yeah, sure.
And we've got Poison Ivy's in there, which, see, I mean, that feels like, of course, she'd be one of the most likely candidates to be on the show. We've got Magpie. We've got Clayface. We've got Kite Man. Hell yeah. And Tom King. As a huge fan of Tom King's Batman run, that makes me very happy. We've got Killer Croc. We've got Condiment King,
they're reaching into the pile of DC Pantheon, right? They're really, you know.
They are, but it sort of feels like it fits the tone of what a Harley Quinn series could be in terms of it being very comedic. Like,
it's going to be off the wall for sure.
Oh, yeah. And we've got the Terrible Trio, it looks like, on here, and then some other characters in here, too. Now, here's the thing. You know,
a question for you.
Yeah.
In that picture, is Kevin Tsujihara in there? Because he should be.
I don't believe so, Adam.
Okay, continue.
One thing, you know, they said it's an adult animated series.
Right.
What that sort of makes me think is that maybe it could be very similar in tone to Batman and Harley Quinn, which I know I'm in the minority on this, but I freaking love that movie.
I liked it too. It's the one. It's the rare time we agree.
Rare time we agree. So that would be really cool. And you know, Adam, we sort of, I don't know if we speculated about this, but there's been a lot of speculation, you know, thinking about, you know, we had those two initially when the DC Digital Service was announced, we had those two series, Titans and then Young Justice returning.
Yeah.
So we sort of speculated whether they'd eventually add more stuff, whether those two would be the only ones that were there at launch, then that maybe they'd then later add some more stuff. But, you know, this sort of confirms that, you know, we're going to get at least one more series on it. I don't know if they're all going to drop at once or whatever, if we're going to get the first episode of each of these at the same time. But, you know, we've got, at least we know that there's going to be more original content already. Well,
yeah,
we know.
And I think there's more live action stuff coming down the pipe, too. Just my theory.
Hey, I'm down. So yeah, just to wrap up, I'm thrilled about this series. It looks awesome.
Great, good. That's we're all on board on that then. That's good. Okay, let's start with our general thoughts. Sam, what are your overall thoughts on Justice League?
Well, going into it,
I'll
go ahead, Anna.
Without spoilers.
No spoilers. Coming out of the movie, I enjoyed it. It was entertaining. It was fun. It was what I wanted in a Justice League movie because it felt like the comic books and it felt like the cartoon, especially. The character interactions between Aquaman, The Flash, Batman, Wonder Woman, Cyborg was fantastic. Even Superman, spoilers, he does come back, everybody. It was just like the pacing. Can we talk a little bit about the negatives?
Yeah,
talk
about everything
in general.
All your thoughts. Yeah.
The pacing I felt was all over the place. You go from one scene to another scene. One character's talking, and then it would jump, you know, and it was just like. It was kind of all over the place. It was kind of the same thing with the theatrical cut with Batman versus Superman, when they chopped out so much of the story.
Right.
But I mean, again, like, who knows if we get an extended cut? I doubt we'll get an extended cut. But overall,
we might get an extended cut of Whedon's Whedon shot, not of what.
Overall, the movie was entertaining. The first frame of the movie, it grabbed me, and it was like, okay, this is different than what you've seen before. That was the feeling I got after seeing that first initial scene. Was like, wow, that's what I wanted out of a certain character all along. Like, wow, there's personality with these characters. You didn't get personality with Batman versus Superman, even Man of Steel to a certain extent. I wanted to see the heroes the way they were portrayed in this movie. Hopeful. Mm-hmm. Joking around. There were so many jokes in this movie. Don't get me wrong. Some landed, some didn't.
Most of them landed, I thought, but yeah.
The Flash, I thought he was the highlight. He was the comedic relief of the movie. Loved Ezra Miller. His portrayal was fantastic. I loved the stuff with him and his father in the prison. That was interesting. And they did it in a way that didn't feel like it was ripping off the television show, which was right. Nice.
Yeah.
And then the other stuff we could talk about in the spoiler section of this, but I just felt overall coming out of it, it did what it had to do as the bookend to the Zack Snyder trilogy in a way. It set these characters up in a place where, like, I was genuinely, I want to see what happens next with these characters. I couldn't say that coming out of Batman versus Superman because it was so dark and depressing. And it was like, what did I just watch for 2.5, almost 3 hours? Because it was so complex. But with this, it was very, here's the villain. This is what we have to do. And they did it. But I just felt like, you know what, it could have been so much more. Like the pacing and the editing issues, that's from the reshoots with Josh Whedon and the stuff with Zack Snyder before. Zack Snyder, his tone was completely different than what Josh Whedon ended up doing in the end. But I just felt like this movie was very, very entertaining. The rewatchability factor on this is fantastic. You can watch this over and over and over and just enjoy it. Whereas Batman versus Superman, if you're not doing anything the entire day, you could watch it. That's how I feel with that movie. I really enjoyed Justice League. I really did. And I think that's what's getting lost with this past weekend is with all these reviews and everything. Everybody who I've talked to who are Marvel fans in my family and friends who went to go see the movie thought it was entertaining. They really got a kick out of it. And it wasn't what they were expecting, especially after the last two DC films. Well, Man of Steel and Batman vs. Superman, because they were so divisive. I remember after Man of Steel came out, talking about it with friends and family for 6 months. Batman vs. Superman, the same thing. Just certain things that happened in that movie that you would never think the character would do. Superman killing Zod. Like, you had to defend why Superman did it. Why didn't he find another way of doing it? Or handling the situation? Because there was no other choice. What do you mean there was no other choice? But with this, Justice League was very paint by the numbers, I felt. But it did what it had.
In a good way.
But it did what it had to do for all the characters. It got you to a point at the end of the movie where, okay, I wonder what the next Batman movie is going to look like. I want to see the next Superman film. Because you had a great time with these characters and these heroes.
Right. Sounds good. Jordan, what did you think? General thoughts.
This film was a dream come true, plain and simple. I've been waiting nearly my whole life for a live-action Justice League movie, and this did not disappoint. I had a smile on my face for almost the entire 2 hours seeing this for the first time, and it was an incredible feeling while watching this movie, and you know, seeing these characters interact in a live-action movie For the first time. I mean, the highlights in terms of those interactions were Batman and the Flash. I thought their dynamic, as you could see in the trailers, it was just hilarious. We got really it was phenomenal performances pretty much across the board in this film. I mean, and that just goes back to how great Zack Snyder is at casting. I mean, in all his movies, I've been so impressed with his casting, and so it was no different here. Really, I loved how we got to see, you know, little snippets of each one of the characters' worlds, sort of setting up what we might be seeing from them in the future. So they did a great job, you know, giving us little snippets of Batman's world, giving us little snippets of Flash's world, giving us little snippets of Cyborg's world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so that was great. Of course, a lot of great action in this movie, as you'd expect. It's not as deep or emotional or thought-provoking as Man of Steel or Batman v Superman, but it is a wildly entertaining film. And I think, Sam, you mentioned the word entertaining when describing it several times. And I mean, that's really the best word I can give to it. Like I said, I had a smile on my face for nearly the entire 2 hours watching it for the first time. Do I have some issues with this movie? Yeah, I do. But here's the thing. It was such a dream come true that I almost just want to give a pass on those issues, because it's just, this movie was just, it was awesome. It really was. And I was so happy walking out of the theater after seeing this movie for the first time. How about you, Adam?
I've been waiting for a Justice League movie since 2001, when I first saw the animated series. That was my entry point into the world of Justice League. And my waiting was warranted. I got what I wanted. The consensus is, you can't help but smile as you're watching it. And I think, you know, for the entirety of that 2 hours, I was as happy as a 10-year-old, on Christmas morning. So you're right. The strengths of the film are the characters and the interactions. There's some really great action scenes that I think are uncomparable in other superhero movies. But you know what? It's in spite of the problems that I do have, this movie's got a lot of heart, and it's a movie where, even like I said, even though I love the other two entries in Zack Snyder's trilogy personally, this movie is, of the three, is the most family friendly, and that's important, because you should have no qualms about taking kids to see a movie with Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman in it. And this film delivers there as well. So I really, really enjoyed myself with this. I'm happy it's here. And I'm happy that, you know, eventually I'll get to rewatch it over and over and over again. And I can guarantee I plan on doing that. So I loved it. Yeah. All right. So now we can go over the spoiler wall. If you haven't seen this movie, ignore the critics' comments. Make up your own mind. And see this film. Go out and see this film. The American friends, go out over the Thanksgiving weekend. Forget that Coco animated movie for a couple of weeks. And go watch Justice League instead, because maybe you'll prove Jordan right, and I hope he is right, and that it'll pick up in subsequent weeks. I think Coco is going to be a more of a problem than anybody foresees, but I hope I'm wrong, and I hope Jordan's right. So ignore Coco, go see. Take your kids, take your cousins, your nephews, your third cousins, your nephews five times removed. Take them all to go see Justice League and see it often. But now we're going to spoil it. So if you haven't seen it, pause this podcast, go to the theater, see it, stay until the very end, because there's two post-credit scenes. and then come back and listen to the show. But right now, we're going over the spoiler wall. So one of the things that strike me from the, I'm going to group them up, and then we can discuss the what I like to call the three re-entry scenes into the world. Whereas what I mean by that is, we get the opening shot of Superman, and it's via cell phone footage, and he's talking about he's talking to kids after he's made a rescue, and they're talking about, I think they're asking him if he ever fought a hippo. Is that right? They're asking him if he ever fought a hippo.
I think that is what they said.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. So they're asking if he fought a hippo, and they're asking him what he likes about being on Earth. And what I loved about it was the fact that we get Superman stopping and conversing with the people around that he's either saved or that have watched him make a rescue or stop a crime. I think that is a very typical move for Superman to do. And it also reminds us, because at this point in the movie, Superman, like in present day, he's dead. So what it does is it fills in. Remember how, I think Sam said this before, and I think Jordan and me have said this on our BBS review, that we never really got a sense of the Superman in between Man of Steel and BBS. Where, remember, they mentioned about he's been saving everybody and he's been doing all this, but they never showed it.
Right, kind of glossed over.
Yeah. Well, this is an example of them showing us that in that Superman in action, and I really appreciated it. And one of the things that struck me right away is how awesome the costume looked, and how like vibrant the red and blue was. And I really got a kick out of that. That was awesome. So I really liked that scene. And then we move into the Batman scene. And basically what he's doing is, you think he's chasing down like a thief, and he is, but he's doing it. And basically he uses his rope to hang the criminal off the side of the roof of the building. And you know, the criminal is crapping his pants essentially. And he's doing that because in this version of the universe, parademons are attracted to fear, or they, I think that's the best way of phrasing it. So he's using this guy to essentially lure and trap a parademon to try and figure out what their weaknesses are. And I gotta be honest with you, this scene, along with the warehouse scene in BVS, are two of the best Batman sequences committed to film, period. In fact, that whole sequence reminded me, like it was straight out of one of the Arkham video games, just with a parademon in the mix.
Yeah, that sequence reminded me of like Justice League War, how that movie began.
Yes, yes.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we get a montage of, again, because Superman is dead, we get it's basically a catch-up scene, not ketchup as in the condiment, ketchup meaning, you know, picking up where we left off.
Condiment King confirmed.
He's going to be in Shazam. He's going to pop up in Shazam for no explicable reason. But we get a scene like picking us up where Lois and Martha are left off, and we get a sense that the farm is up, you know, is owned by the bank and is being sold because Martha can't afford the upkeep. And Lois is still the Daily Planet, but she's no longer the hard-hitting investigative reporter we're used to. She's now relegated herself to doing puff pieces because she doesn't have the heart to be her old self. Because of Superman's death. And we also see a montage set to the song Everybody Knows basically the world's going to hell in a handbasket, and you see, you know, thieves robbing the store of like the corner store owned by Muslim shop owners. And I thought that was an interesting scene because it plays to the fears that we're dealing with today, or and the problems we're dealing with in today's culture. But and it also, and all these scenes, like with Martha going through the foreclosure and Lois being depressed, and then that scene about, you know, the thieves robbing the store, it really shows, if you didn't miss Superman before, seeing those scenes playing to that song, you'll definitely miss Superman after this. And then we get a catch up of with Wonder Woman, and this is where the scene, I guess it's a courthouse, right? It's a courthouse, correct? It's not a bank. There was some, I remember when the trailer came out, there was some questioning whether it was a bank or a courthouse. It's a courthouse. There's these terrorists who want to basically set off a bomb and level, I think it was four city blocks, and there's school kids on a trip as they're playing this out, and of course Wonder Woman breaks in, and you know, it's a reworked version of the Hans Zimmer Wonder Woman theme with Elfman's twist on it. And, you know, she busts through the door like she did in Wonder Woman. And you see she uses the lasso. Basically, first of all, the way she throws those terrorists around like a rag doll. Yeah, I'll never get tired of seeing Wonder Woman just lay waste to criminals. Like, it's just a beautiful sight. And the way she uses the lasso to get control and dispose of the bomb is pretty cool. And then when she saves the school children with her bracelets by running across the room from the gunfire, that was incredible. Like, I loved that scene was almost as cool or on par with some of the stuff we saw in Wonder Woman. So I really like these opening montage, like these opening quote unquote catch up scenes that I saw. What were your the only thing? My only negative was with Lois, and here's why. Because yes, she would grieve, but Superman being dead, at least from the Lois that I know from in the comics, only drove Lois further to seek out the truth and fight for justice in Superman's absence. So the fact that she was writing puff pieces was a little bit, I didn't really buy that. Like, I get that she's grieving, but the Lois that I know from the books would not do that. So, and that's, and I think that's more of a, if I had to guess, that's more of a Joss Whedon thing, because Zack Snyder, one thing I'll credit Zack Snyder with is he's very good at portraying strong, you know, idealistic and determined women. So I think that may have been, Lois's portrayal may have been a Joss Whedon thing, but that was the only negative I had in that montage of scenes. What were you guys' thoughts? Sam, why don't you go first?
Well, like I said, right at the beginning when they did that that cell phone footage of Superman, you get the sense of a different Superman, even though this is pre-death.
Right.
Like I said to you off air, in Batman vs. Superman, the Day of the Dead scene that ended up in the theatrical cut and the extended cut, after he saves that woman and flies her down, and that whole crowd, like, just want to touch him because it's the whole Jesus Christ imagery.
Right.
And he just looks like he's so out of place. He just looks like, get me out of here. What? I didn't sign up for this. Like, you totally get that, like, flipped on its head. Like, after saving somebody, he doesn't just up and fly away, which is what we got accustomed to in Man of Steel and even BVS to a certain extent.
Well, Man of Steel did a better job of, like, he'd stop and say, are you okay? You know,
right. So when he caught the guy out of the helicopter,
right.
And he's like, are you okay? And he puts him off to the side, and then that big non or whatever that Kryptonian thing was came after him. That huge monster came after him that was with Feora. Yeah. But you never really got the sense of his connection with humanity, his connection with kids in Man of Steel or even BVS. He was always brooding, trying to contemplate, like, should I listen to Jonathan Kent or should I listen to Jor-El? I'm in somewhere in between. I don't know what my place is. In this, in Justice League, you get the sense, even when he comes back, he's totally different. He has personality. He never had personality in the other two films. He's joking around with the other Justice League members, which I thought was fantastic. Like, when he says at one point...
Stick to the scene, like, Sam. You're jumping ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm jumping
ahead.
You ruined.
You came back. So, you know, sport. Now, me and Jordan are going to get hate mail because you ruined it.
But I didn't know we were telling the entire movie. You don't have to listen to the movie. Just listen to this.
Just focus on
that. But no. The opening scene, that, for me, that opening scene, because I'm a huge Superman fan. Everybody knows that. To see that in his interaction with the kids... And, like, when he stops, when they ask him, what is the best thing about being on the on Earth, he couldn't think of anything. I mean, up until that point, his relationship with Earth and humanity is kind of distant. Yeah. So I kind of got why he would stop in that moment from the last two films.
I think it's that he could think of so many things that he couldn't just pick one. I that's the way I interpreted it.
I thought he wanted to say Lois, but he couldn't for obvious reasons.
Right. Well, his secret. Yeah, exactly. His secret identity. So, yeah, I think, Adam, I'm with you. I think maybe he was going to say Lois, or maybe he was going to say
Martha.
Just something.
Just to piss off everybody in the audience.
Yeah, Martha. Everybody. But, yeah, I really enjoyed that scene. That scene, when that came up, I just had a huge smile on my face. I was like, this is awesome. This is what I wanted to see in the other two films.
Right.
The Batman stuff at the beginning when he jumps down with the parademon stuff, that was very much like the warehouse scene in BVS. It was just awesome.
Yeah.
The Wonder Woman stuff, you can't go wrong with Wonder Woman right now. Just the way she is as a character in these films. She is the driving force of these films as a character. But yeah, those first three scenes, like, totally, like, let the audience know or the audience member know, like, this is going to be fun and lighthearted. That's what I got out of those scenes.
Okay. Jordan, what were your thoughts of the way the film opened in those three?
Oh, dude, this was such – the film opened on such a high note. I mean, you start with that iPhone footage of Superman, and it's just – it really is beautiful. It just – it's Superman being Superman, and I loved it. And it's – like I said, I had a slightly different interpretation than you guys, which is that I felt like Superman, there's so much that he loves about Earth that he couldn't even come to the conclusion of picking one thing that he loves about Earth. But I loved it, with the exception of that was the one place in the film that I could notice the CGI mustache.
Yeah, that was, I think, and you know what? It's overblown. Look, the whole mustache, I'll just say it right now, the whole mustache gate is overblown.
Yeah, but I wasn't looking for it.
That was
the
most obvious place it was in.
That was the only place I noticed it. So
it's like, come on, couldn't you have timed it? I mean, you're opening the movie with this. You'd want to make sure that's the place where it's the first time we see him. You might want to fix it. I know it's a cell phone footage, but still, that kid needs a better cell phone if the reception is that it produces that lip movement. His parents are jipping him on a cell phone plan, but go ahead. But that was the worst of the mustache gate. Everything else looked okay, in my opinion.
I definitely.
But you know what? Why not? It's themed. It's Movember. So what the hell?
No, I agree, Adam. And it's just, it was great to see those kids, you know, looking up to him and to see the beacon of hope that Superman is. And it's just, it was a wonderful, wonderful film, scene to start off the film and really emphasize why the world is, you know, reeling after the loss of this icon. And then we move on to Batman and holy shit. When the crook comes out and you see it, you can glimpse Batman, like his reflection in the window.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had to stop myself from screaming in the theater. There was really 2 points in this movie, and I'll get to the other one later, where I had to stop myself from screaming in the theater because I was like, oh, my God, because I knew it was coming. And it was like this, like you said it great, Adam. This is one of the best Batman scenes ever committed to live-action film. It is incredible. Sam, I think you brought up that it's really similar to Justice League War, or I think it's also in the Justice League Origin comic, too. Batman, he's like fighting the Parademon on the rooftop of Gotham. Of course, that also involves is Green Lantern. But yeah, other than that, it's a really similar scene. Just and I love, I mean, it's just, it's so Batman seeing him use that guy to instill fear in him to get the Parademon to come. Oh man, it was awesome. And just Ben Affleck killed it there when he tells the guy's like asking him what he's doing, and he's like, I need you for fear or whatever. And oh man, he says they can sense fear, I think is what he says. And it's, oh my goodness, that was a good scene. And we get that, you brought it up, I think Adam, you brought it up, the Everybody Knows song,
yes,
playing. And
I like that song, by the way.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And Zack Snyder just continues to kill it with opening credit montages. I mean, we had the Watchmen one, then we had the BVS one, which I think might still be the best opening credits I've ever seen in a movie. With the Lie and with the Wayne murder. Oh, my.
Yeah, it's the most beautiful version of two people getting shot I've ever seen.
BVS, you described it. Yeah. That's totally true. But, I mean, this one didn't quite top that, but it was still really beautiful.
Yeah.
That song worked great, and to see those opening credits, I mean, just Snyder killed it with that. Then we had the Wonder Woman intro was probably the weakest of sort of the Trinity's intros, in my opinion. It didn't quite do what the Superman and Batman ones did to you, but it was still pretty awesome. You know, we saw a lot of that in one of the trailers, but, you know, it was really cool to see, you know, Wonder Woman you know, being Wonder Woman. And I will say that one thing that occurred to me after seeing the movie that I was like, man, you know what would have made those, both the Batman and Wonder Woman intros even cooler, is if they had been fighting like a named villain, like perhaps one that they weren't planning for the Batman one, like maybe one that they're not planning to use in the solo Batflick or whatever, like a more minor Batman villain. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, he could be going after Mr. Zazz or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Could have been anybody. Yeah.
I just bring up Mr. Zazz because I love Mr. Zazz, and they used him in a cameo role in the Dark Knight trilogy. So yeah, I was like, yeah, you know, maybe here, but or maybe somebody else. I don't know. Just a smaller Batman villain him going after, that would have made it even better. Or like Wonder Woman. I was gonna say if she was taking on Cheetah, but I'm like, you know, Cheetah's one of her biggest villains, so maybe they'd want to save.
I think we might see Cheetah in number two, but that's just my theory.
Oh, I'd be so on board with that. But anyway, some named villain, it would be awesome to see Wonder Woman.
I hear you.
But overall, I mean, just absolutely incredible the way this film opened.
Cool. What I want to go to next is the, what do we think of the intros of the characters and montage is not the right word. But they like the intros into their world. Like you see, for instance, I like the fact that the pacing worked in those scenes, like the rapid fire kind of, you know, the recruitment kind of thing, because that would have brought the film down if it was overly drawn out. And I like the fact that, you know, Aquaman was just like, he's a man of two worlds. He doesn't fit in Atlantis. He doesn't fit in on Earth, but he's helping those, you know, that village because it's the right thing to do and nobody else will. And then you have Cyborg, who's closed off from the world because of the way he looks in the accident. And so he's more reclusive towards it. But then you have the total opposite, which is Barry, who instantly is like, I'm in, you know, stop right there, I'm in.
I need friends.
Yeah, and also the fact that, so I liked how quick they were, and like, you know, two out of the three said no initially, but they were for very different reasons, the two that said no. And then I like the fact that we got, like Sam mentioned it earlier, a little bit of Flash with his father, and it sort of sets the table for his backstory, but it doesn't go overboard with it. Like, it doesn't spoil it too much. Same with Aquaman when he goes to Atlantis and he runs into Mera for the first time. You know, that was a little taste of Atlantis, but it never... It never goes overboard with it. The only one I wish we would have saw more, and tell me about what you think, is Cyborg. I would have loved to see more of the accident. I feel we didn't really get enough of that. It would have been something to see, I thought. But in terms of that,
I was really intrigued with the Cyborg storyline because it felt very much like Frankenstein in a sense.
Yeah.
Like, and I would have loved to see what Victor was like before the accident, like playing football, kind of like, again, like I keep referencing Justice League War and the New 52 Justice League comic, but like that's the template that they were using for Victor Stone. And I would have loved to see like what he was prior to the accident happening.
And we saw a shot of him pre-accident in one of the trailers, but it seems as if that was cut.
That was cut.
Right. I think they filmed like some football stuff for BVS.
Yeah.
Got to, because when Perry was saying to Clark, like, I want you to cover this football, and I guess that was Victor Stone's intro, and never got to see that. But I was very pleasantly surprised by the Aquaman stuff and how they were going to handle talking underwater, which was really cool, and how Mera clears the bubble and they talk within the bubble, which was really cool. Them fighting Steppenwolf, that was great.
But
the Flash stuff, I really enjoyed, because I love the Flash TV series, and I was so worried that they were just going to do a copy and paste job, but they didn't. The actor who plays Henry Allen is also Dr. Manhattan, so I love that. That was really, really funny.
Yeah.
But the interaction between the two of them was completely different than the TV show. And I really liked that. And I liked that Barry wasn't already a CSI.
Yes.
He was still pretty much trying to find his way in the world. And I loved what Henry said to him. You just got to get out of your own way and just do it. You are the smartest guy I know. And I connected with that. I love that. Even in the TV show, when he says, you are your own man, you gotta get out of your own way and just blaze ahead, blaze your path, which is what Henry said in the movie. And it was very, very true. He finds his way by the end of the movie. Well, I'm jumping ahead again, but you could see, like, he finds his way. He gets in with a group of people that support him and want to be with him as a hero and stand alongside of him. He was the comic relief, but I think that intro was, I thought, perfect for Barry Allen.
Right.
And
Mark McClure was the cop.
He was the police officer. What was it? Fingerprinting the guy?
Yes.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
So Jordan, what was your take on the intros of those characters and sort of the little hints we got at their worlds?
Oh yeah, I loved it. I guess I'll start with Aquaman. I guess I freaking loved what we saw of Atlantis. I thought it was awesome.
Yes.
Amber Heard. If she were in all 2 hours of this movie, it would not be enough for me.
They could have just made a Mera movie. I think that's what.
Oh my goodness, I would watch that
Let's have a trinity of Mera, Harley Quinn, and Wonder Woman, and that could be a movie.
Oh yeah, no kidding, dude. But anyway, we are going to see a lot more of her in Aquaman, and yeah. I can't wait for that. I think she's awesome as Mera.
Yes.
And I mean, just that little scene we saw of her and Arthur talking, I mean, I just can't wait, and I can't wait to see where their romance goes in presumably in Aquaman. Mm-hmm. So I'm, you know, totally on board for that. I'm a big Amber Heard fan, just in general. I really liked her past performances, and so her as Mera is just, I think it's awesome, and I love what we saw of her here. Moving on to the Flash, I like I said earlier, his interactions with Batman were some of the best in this film, and it starts right from the start. We'd seen a lot of this. I mean, it was in that first Comic Con teaser. A lot of the scene was. We got it in in one of those clips that they released prior to the movie. This was one of them. The scene where Bruce visits him in his, you know, little apartment.
Yeah.
And but it's so hilarious. Like, they have just such contrasting personalities, and I loved it. Like, I loved all the little quirks they gave Barry, like him carrying around a pizza box. Just little stuff like that. You brought up Mark McClure, and you're going to kill me for referencing him as this, but Smallville alum Mark McClure.
Oh, God.
Daxer.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was awesome. He was supposed to be in this film a little more than he was, but, I'll take what I can get.
Right.
You brought up that you thought that Henry Allen's dynamic with Barry was a lot different than on the TV show. Maybe this is just me, but I thought that a lot of Billy Crudup's mannerisms as Henry Allen were very similar to John Wesley Shipp's mannerisms as the character. Like, his performance just seems similar, which is fine with me. I think they're both great, but I love what we saw of him. I will say, and I mean, I knew this coming into the movie, this is Barry Allen in name only. This is Wally West that Ezra Miller is playing. And I'm totally down with that because Wally's my favorite Flash. So, I mean, part of me is like, I wish they had just named him Wally. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm totally on board with this. He's hilarious.
Yeah, here's what I'll note about the one thing that I forgot to mention. Two things. Basically, Aquaman and the way he behaves in the little bits of his storyline that Mera, you know, was doing exposition for. That is from Jeff Johns' run of the New 52. And look-wise, he looks like the Peter David run of the 90s. You're right about Flash, that he's basically, you know, he's got Barry Allen's name and backstory, but he's got Wally West's personality. So he's an amalgam of the two. I think it's the best of both worlds scenario. And what I love about Barry is that he's one of us. He's a fanboy. Like, you see him, he gets giddy over the bat signal, or, you know, when he runs, when he's like, this is the bat cave, or when he runs into the Batmobile. I identified with Barry because if I was in the bat cave or saw the bat signal or got a chance to sit in the Batmobile, I would be acting the exact same way. And the cool thing about what Cyborg's little origin did was it showed us more of, remember how we said in our Wonder Woman review, Jordan, that, you know, Wonder Woman was very motherly towards the ragtag group of Steve Trevor's, soldiers.
Yeah.
She was very motherly and nurturing of Cyborg. And I loved the balance of, Wonder Woman, the badass superhero, you know, fighter, and the mothering aspect, you know, the nurturing aspect of with Barry. With Victor. And I loved, one of the things I did love is that Bruce Wayne, yes, he's bringing the team together out of necessity, but there's also a little bit of being uncomfortable about being in a team dynamic that Affleck plays the whole way through. And I think that was, he found the right balance of that with Batman and Bruce Wayne. The only negative I have with Bruce and Batman in this film is I thought they gave him one too many one-liners. That was just my take on that. But overall, I agree with all, you know, we're all in agreement on that. With Steppenwolf, what's that?
I'll say about Cyborg, I really feel like he coming into the film, I felt like he was going to be my least favorite of the Justice League. Like, he was the one that in the trailers and stuff had impressed me the least, and I knew the least about the actor too. But he was maybe the biggest surprise of this movie for me, because he really was, I felt like, in many ways, the emotional core of this movie some ways, because, like, he starts out like Ray Fisher killed it. That dude was awesome.
Yes.
And his line, the way he delivered it when his father, another Smallville alum, I got to point out, Dr. Stephen Hamilton. So there are already two Smallville alum, and we haven't even, I mean, Well, I guess you did bring up Amy. I don't think I've talked about Amy Adams yet this episode, but as soon as I do, I'll mention
folks,
her.
Folks, to quote
we're starting a Smallville podcast.
To quote the Joker's surgeon in Batman 89, you see what I have to work with here?
Oh, my God.
You're like Wonder Woman in this movie. I work with children.
Yeah, exactly.
But Cyborg really he has that great line delivery Ray Fisher does of when Silas tells him you're not a monster, and he's like, funny how you thought I was the monster, and you know he says, funny you thought I was talking about myself is what he says. And you know, that was just such a powerful line. And really with Cyborg in this movie, he starts out wishing that his father hadn't saved him, basically. Yeah. And then at the end of that movie, you get his arc in this movie was phenomenal, because you get that, and I know I'm jumping ahead, but whatever. He's you know, with him and Superman, and Superman says something to the effect of, they're doing something really dangerous. And he's like, I like living. And Cyborg says something to the effect of, and this is not verbatim at all, but he's like, me too. And it's like, yeah, now he has a reason to go on living. He no longer wishes his father hadn't saved him, and he feels like he has a purpose again. And I thought that was just such a great arc for the character, really.
And you know what I will say before we move on to Steppenwolf and the whole villain and his plan and all that, because then we're going to get to Superman. But what I will say about Cyborg is his armor being all CGI looked really, really solid. Like, it was very,
I agree. And I think it's going to look even better next time we see him, because he got some upgrades at the end of this movie.
Yes, he did. Okay, now, with Steppenwolf, like, here's what I'll say. You know, his plot, which was essentially to get to Earth to unite all the mother boxes that were on Earth, which would basically essentially terraform Earth into, almost like a colony of Apocalypse. For Darkseid's arrival, that made sense. I got it, and it's a good enough reason to bring the Justice League together. So I like that aspect. I thought Kieran Hines, who did the voice, was menacing and intimidating. So I like the voice aspect of it. The two areas where look, the villain is gonna be like in a Justice League movie. The Justice League, the team needs a punching bag. So he definitely serves that purpose. But the two issues that I had with Steppenwolf are this. One is, these are two things, but they go together. He's basically nothing more than Darkseid's lackey, right? And number two is, he's got a one-note personality, in my opinion. Like, it wasn't my, like, in a world where, and I'm not talking about the DCEU as a whole, but I'm talking about villains. Like, you have Zod, you have Lex Luthor, you have the Joker. All these people have personalities, and they have motives where their execution is wrong, but in some cases, you can kind of understand, you can not sympathize, it's not the right word, but you know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Steppenwolf had none of that. And you know what? He was about as one-dimensional and one-note as three-quarters of the MCU villains are. And for DC Comics and DC Comics on film period villains, they've been better, and I think they deserve better. The other issue I had with Steppenwolf was, in faraway shots, he looked fantastic. When they did close-ups on his face, it did look a little bit rubbery. Sometimes when he talked, the mouth and the words didn't sync up 100%. Having said that, he's a giant monster, so I let it go. But, this thing is a $300 million production. I expect, when you're going to do a close-up of the villain, I expect it better. Having said that, having all my negatives of Steppenwolf aside, he's part of my two favorite sequences in the film. The Amazons, when he comes to Earth in present day, and to gather the mother box from the Amazons, and it's essentially this giant game of keep away with the mother box, with the Amazons. That was phenomenal. Like, the Amazons are badass, the scene they're in, they steal the show, and that plus the beachfront scene in Wonder Woman, I want a whole film about the Amazons. Plain and simple. The other fantastic scene that I loved was, you know, when Wonder Woman was explaining Steppenwolf and the Mother Box and the Unity and all that to Bruce Wayne? That flashback was epic. And I know that word is overused, but it's deserved here. And like, it, first of all, the brief 2.5 minutes that we got, it had Amazons, Zeus, the Atlanteans, the Green Lantern, or a Green Lantern, all fighting Steppenwolf and basically beating him back. And it looked like a shot from Lord of the Rings. That's how good it looked. And again, there's a Green Lantern. I love this scene.
Yeah,
so even though I had issues with Steppenwolf, he was in two of my favorite scenes in the movie. So what did you guys think of his plan, the look of the CGI, and then you know, the flashback scene with him? The other thing I'll say is that even though I complained a little bit, I can't complain too hard of the way he looks, because it is CGI, and I'm sorry, he doesn't look any worse than Dormammu from Doctor Strange or Surtur from Thor Ragnarok. I'm sorry, he doesn't. And if you think he does, you're deluding yourself. You're drinking Disney's Kool-Aid. So go ahead, Sam. What do you think of what were your thoughts on Steppenwolf?
No, you pretty much hit it on the head. My biggest problem with Steppenwolf was that flashback scene where he's fighting the Atlanteans, the Amazons, and even the Lanterns. He's kicking ass left and right, yeah. And he looks all powerful. But I'm gonna jump ahead. But like, when he goes on later in the movie, he's kind of depowered in a way. Like, it was like you have all this power at the beginning of the movie, and you are ripping through Amazons left and right. But then, like, when you go up against one at the end, and even Superman in a way, he was kind of like a punching bag. So it was kind of like his power set was all over the place. He comes to Earth at the beginning, and like, he's just laying waste to everybody.
Yeah.
And then he goes up against, you know, the team, and it's like he's the ragdoll. Like, there was no fight. No real fight, I thought.
Right.
You never got the sense with Steppenwolf. Yeah, his plan was to get all the mother boxes and to unite them to start the terraforming of Apocalypse on Earth.
Yeah.
Again, with the terraforming, we saw that in Man of Steel, where they wanted to terraform the Earth for new Krypton here on Earth.
Yeah.
I love that storyline. Just let's go back to the terraforming the Earth again. But his plan was sound. Him as the character was kind of forgettable, you know? Like you said earlier, he was the lackey of Darkseid. I wanted Darkseid. Sorry.
Yeah, and we would have got it if it stayed a two-parter. I believe that, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. Jordan, what was your take on all this? Steppenwolf, the flashback scene with Steppenwolf, what was it your...
Yeah, he was one of my issues with this movie. I basically have the opposite feeling with him as I did with Lex Luthor and Batman v Superman, which is with Steppenwolf, I loved the performance and I loved the look, but I didn't care for, you know, how I didn't think his motivations were fleshed out enough, and I didn't think they gave him enough backstory, and here's the thing with Steppenwolf. This having Steppenwolf as the main villain of a Justice League movie is like having Ubu as the main villain of a solo Batman movie.
Yeah.
Who's that?
That's what it's like. Exactly. And it's like, here's the thing. People, and so I say it's the opposite of Lex Luthor and Batman v Superman, because with Lex Luthor, I didn't like the performance, but I liked his actions and motivations. But people say that Marvel has a villain problem in the MCU. The DCEU, at least in my opinion, has a villain problem, because there's only two that I've really loved so far, and that's Zod and Joker. So other than that, I haven't been impressed with the villain.
Joker wasn't the villain, and that's what pisses me off. Joker wasn't a villain, but let's not go there again.
That's true. He wasn't the villain of that movie. But getting back to Steppenwolf, I thought Kieran Hines. I don't know how to pronounce that guy's name.
He's not going to come on our show.
Okay, I'll just call him by his last name. It's easier. Hines. That I can pronounce.
And now I'm thinking of Heinz ketchup, but go ahead.
he made him really intimidating in terms of his voice. I thought that he looked fine in terms of the CG, but I'm also the guy that thinks Green Lantern has great CGI. I'm like Brendan Lowe, because I think he brought this up on a recent episode of Holy Batcast, maybe even their Just League review. He said that he never notices bad CGI. I'm the same way. I almost never, except with Henry Cavill at the beginning of this movie in that one scene. But other than that, I really don't notice bad CGI usually. Yeah. So I'm not a good judge of that. But I like that stuff about him. But I really wish they had, first of all, he shouldn't have been the villain of this movie, as I mentioned. Darkseid should have been, if you were going to go with Apocalypse. But I wish, with an Apocalypse villain, but I really wish they had fleshed out some of the Apocalypse mythology. Like, I wish we had seen some of Apocalypse, maybe, like a flashback of him on Apocalypse, maybe see Granny Goodness, maybe see Desaad, even if they don't show us Darkseid, show us some of that. Or hear about, because I think he's supposed to be Darkseid's uncle, is that correct?
I think Darkseid's...
Was it his nephew?
Darkseid is his uncle. I don't know. It's a very weird... I mean, we'll have to consult Maury Povich, but it's a very weird family dynamic. I'm not sure. It's one of those two. I don't know which one it is.
In any case, I wish they had mentioned that, mentioned something about that. I mean, he mentioned Darkseid once in this movie, but we really didn't.
For Darkseid, it's like, all right.
And
the general audience is like, who?
Who's that?
We really didn't get any like, they didn't delve into any of the Apocalyptian mythology or anything. I guess one thing I'll point out, I did, like I said, I loved his voice. I loved the, I loved the way he looked. There was one line that felt really out of place for me, which was when he says to that guy, when that guy is like, please, I have a family. And he's like, why does everyone tell me that?
Yeah, that's,
and
I was like, that, but that's clear. That's Joss Whedon.
That was Joss Whedon. Yeah. You want to know how I know that was Joss Whedon? Because it sounds exactly what Ultron sounded like in Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's the thing with Ultron. And not, I know this isn't a Marvel podcast, but I loved Ultron at the beginning of that movie. Like, he scared the shit out of me, like, when he first, like, developed or whatever. And then all of a sudden they started giving him all these one-liners, and I was like, come on, it took all the gravitas away from him.
So I'm
glad that that was the only case that happened in Justice League, was it was really just that one line where I felt that way. But overall, I mean, I liked Steppenwolf. I just didn't love him.
But there's something Sam brought up, which is a great segue. Sam brought up that his power levels were all over the place. At the beginning, he's very strong, and the first time he meets the JLA, or in the tunnel underneath the Gotham Harbor, he kicks their ass.
Right.
You know, Aquaman's the only reason they survived that, and that was a cool shot when Aquaman comes in and stops the water with his quin. What the hell is it? Quindent? Because it's not a trident.
Quindent.
Yeah. So he and that was cool, but the
pitchfork. It's a pitchfork, Adam.
He's the one who brought a pitchfork, right?
Right.
So, but I think it was important to show him as overpowered as that, because it reinforces that the team needs Superman, okay? And which will segue right into how they brought Superman back. First of all, because then I definitely want to get Sam to be on point on this, because he loves Superman, as do we. But Sam is like a super Superman fan. I love when Bruce is having that conversation with Alfred, and he's like, this team needs Superman. And Alfred's going on about, it's not about powers, it's not about strength. And Bruce is like, he's more human than I am. He's lived in this world. He has a job. He's loved, you know. And that line of dialogue from Ben Affleck was, I think, some of the best dialogue Batman spouted in the entirety of the DCEU. I love that scene. And then I love the fact that the team is having a debate about whether it's right or not to bring back Superman. You know, Wonder Woman's dead set against it. Flash sides with Wonder Woman. Cyborg sides with that. And they're arguing over something like a legitimate moral quandary, not about, you know, in the park about capes and whatever Tony Stark was spewing in the first Avengers, you know, like stupid stuff. They're actually arguing about something legitimate. And the other thing I liked about it was that when they do make the decision, even though Wonder Woman disagrees, they do it by committee, and the consensus is we got to do it because we're shit out of luck with this guy if we don't have Superman. But the other thing I loved about it is that when, first of all, the way they brought him back, I thought made sense with the story, in how they went back to the whole, you know, the chamber in the ship.
The Genesis.
Bizarro baptism kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, they used the energy from the regenerative capabilities of the mother boxes, combined with electricity from the flashes from the Speed Force. You know, it was very Frankenstein-y, but I thought it worked in the context of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved about it was the fact that the two princes, after they made the decision, the two driving forces behind actually resurrecting Superman were the two youngest, most inexperienced members of their team. They actually made use of them. Like, they actually gave them the ball, you know, a big bulk of the quote-unquote hero moment in that scene. And I love that. What was your guys' take on the resurrection itself and having those two be the principal driving forces of that?
Well, I thought that was one of the best scenes in the entire movie, was bringing him back. And the way they brought him back was totally not what I was expecting at all. I mean, see, I thought like the sun would regenerate him, or Darkseid or Steppenwolf was going to, like, regenerate him in some way. Granny Goodness, if we saw her, like we saw in Justice League War, which, again, I'm going to reference again, when she brainwashes him.
We should review that one day on a side note, George.
And like, also in Superman the Animated Series, he was brainwashed by Apocalypse and sent back. So I thought we were going to get something like that, and the Justice League would have to deal with Superman turning, and they have to turn him back. But the way they did it in the context of the movie, with the Mother Box regenerating him with the Speed Force, was fantastic. And it worked, like you said, in the context of the story. You didn't have to do like this whole thing that would have took up most of the movie. And the other thing I loved in the scene was the joke that Flash says, if it turns Pet Cemetery, you know, like when he says Pet Cemetery, that was great.
Yeah.
It was funny. So great, and I laughed. I was like, yeah, if he comes back, Pet Cemetery. And then when he shows up and Aquaman's like, yep, this is bad. It was great, because you could like, just see the...
He's not all right. He's not all right.
He's not all right. It was great. And it was like, oh, shit. But it was a great moment, and you could just see the look of terror in their face, like, oh, my God, this is horrible. It was a great moment, and I thought that was one of the highlights of the movie for me, was when they brought him back. And the whole, the use of, again, the Genesis Chamber, like they brought Zod back.
That's what it's called, I forgot, damn it.
The Genesis Chamber.
I called it the Moral Baptism, whatever the fuck, no
one. And the Scout Ship. Yeah, they were inside the Scout Ship with the Genesis Chamber, and it was cool. And it worked. I thought it worked for the movie.
And we're going to talk about his return in a second after Jordan gives his. Jordan, what's your take on the way the resurrection happened and Flash and Cyborg being the principals behind it?
Yeah, okay. First off, I just wanted to mention, I think we brought up Justice League War with one of our upcoming guests, that they expressed interest that they'd want to review that. So I think we had already discussed that we might be reviewing
at our notes, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember offhand, but I believe that's
correct. If not, we'll add it to the list.
Yeah, certainly. It's a really good movie.
We got a year to kill before Aquaman, so that's
yeah, that's true. I also wanted to touch on the line you brought up with Bruce about Superman being more human than he is. I mean, yeah, that was just really powerful stuff, and I mean, there is some truth to it. you know, I have my own little headcanon that at some point Selena's going to come along and show him his humanity again, and it's going to be really sweet, and they're going to have a whole romantic arc in one of the upcoming Batman movies with that. Anyway, that is just my headcanon right now, and that's something I'd hope to see at some point. I guess what I was trying to say was that that is right up there probably with the Men Are Still Good speech in Batman v Superman in terms of Bruce's best dialogue in the DCEU so far. Because that was really good.
I'd agree with that for sure.
Probably doesn't quite touch that for me, but it's pretty close. But yeah, moving on to the whole Superman return. I was about to say Superman Returns, and then I'm like, that's not this movie.
Yeah, not the Borefest, the actual scene. Yeah, go on.
I like that movie.
Well, of course you do.
I guess I'm on the opposite end as Sam. This was actually one of the moments in this movie that fell pretty flat for me. And I agree with Sam. He brought up some really funny moments, like the Pet Cemetery thing cracked me up too. There was some good stuff in there. But overall, the whole thing of them resurrecting Superman just didn't really work for me. I brought up on my Batman, I think it was on my Batman v Superman review. Is that right, Adam, that when I brought up how averse I am to resurrections in general?
Yes, yeah, we've established it. Yeah.
Okay, all right. So I'm not sure whether to put it more on, because I criticized it in Batman v Superman with them killing him, knowing that he was going to come right back in the next film. And then I criticized them here for them bringing him back. So it's like, I don't know which film to really criticize, whether I should more criticize this or more criticize BVS. But in any case, I'm just, I already knew that it wasn't going to be one of my favorite things in terms of them resurrecting him. But they could have made it better for me. Like, they could have made it so that I was at least like, okay, it sort of works for me, mostly, because, like, at the same time, like, I have more of a problem when it comes to humans being resurrected, because that just seems more implausible. You can sort, I still don't like it that much, but you can sort of, and I know it's, you can sort of make me buy into it a little bit more when it's like a Kryptonian, because you can be like, well, their physiology allows them to be resurrected, whereas a human couldn't. And I'm like, okay, I can buy into that a little bit. But here's the biggest thing that made this moment fall flat for me. Okay, do you remember, Adam, when you talked me off the ledge about Danny Elfman scoring this film? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay, I should have jumped off the ledge right then, because I said it before on this podcast, the Man of Steel soundtrack is my favorite film score of all time.
Okay,
and then Danny Elfman comes, and it's the third film of the trilogy theme once in this entire movie. Okay, I cannot even tell you how much more powerful the scene is would be when Superman awakens if they had used that Man of Steel theme instead of the John Williams theme. Like, and this is not a knock on the John Williams theme. I like the John Williams theme. I don't like it nearly as much as the Man of Steel theme, to be honest. But it's not even about what I like more. It's about, this is a theme that's carried through two films already. It has so much, you know, connection built up with this version of the character. And it's like, to not use that when he makes his triumphant return, it's a huge letdown. And it's like, then we see him in the field, and it's like, they even used it in the trailer. They used it in the trailer, a different version of that scene, because they edited that scene. But it's like, how does Danny Elfman come in here and not use that masterpiece of a theme more than once in this whole movie? And it's just, it's so disappointing to me that he chose to do that. I can live with him not using the Batman theme from BVS in this movie. I can live with that. I like the Batman theme in BVS, but I wasn't over the moon about it.
Okay,
however, him not using the Superman theme, the Zimmer Superman theme, that is a travesty. It is tragic, and I hope to God that someone like with that score at some point, like, so puts it up on YouTube and recuts that scene with some of those Superman scenes in this movie with the Hans Zimmer score.
Oh, it's coming. As soon as the Blu-ray comes out, you know it's coming.
Well, see that. Somebody better give me that, because I want to hear that, and because I think it would really make those scenes a lot better for me. But overall, the whole Superman resurrection just fell pretty flat for me.
Okay, that's fair. And your complaint about the theme is valid. I would have put the Man of Steel theme there and the John Williams theme later on in the fight where it actually was with Steppenwolf and Superman. But let's talk about Superman post, you know, resurrection, where this is, I'll say it right now, and we'll get into it, but it's my favorite scene of the film. When he comes back and he's all confused and he's not evil, but he's, again, groggy, or he's not all right, as Aquaman would say. And he's taking on the entire Justice League. Like, he tosses Batman aside. And then, he brings up that he's choking him. And he's like, before that, he doesn't remember Wonder Woman, right? He has no context who the other three are because he never met them before. But he doesn't remember Wonder Woman, but he remembers Batman. And, you know, he's super, you know, as he fights the JLA and he super speeds to Batman. And he's like, I remember you. And he's like, tell me, do you bleed? And then he tosses Batman aside. That was cool. Again,
that was a great moment.
Yeah, and it was great callback. And I like the fact that, look, Batman's shit out of luck in this film when it comes to the Superman moment and the final fight with Steppenwolf. And I'm okay with that because Batman's a human. And I'm glad they actually showed that. But with Superman, there's the scene where, like, he's going nuts. And they're all, like, you have Aquaman, Cyborg, and Wonder Woman holding him. She's actually got him tied with the lasso. And Flash thinks, I got this. I'm going to super speed and attack him from behind. Like, subdue him from behind. So he's in super speed now. We're seeing it in slow-mo, obviously, because that's the only way as an audience we'd be able to see it. And then all of a sudden, in mid-slow-mo, as Flash is rounding the corner, Superman, out of the corner of the eyes, looks at him and gives him this look. And then Flash has this oh shit moment. And that was an amazing scene. And then the only one that can actually go toe-to-toe with him, and it would be a draw, is Wonder Woman. And that little skirmish, as that's what I'm going to call it, was good. Now, I'm glad, personally, that was as long as it was, because I didn't want to see two-thirds of the film of Superman fighting the League. I think what they did there was just enough, and I liked it. I also like, because it's part of the scene, and then I'll let you guys discuss it before we go on to the finale and our rating, but the other part of the scene was when he was in, like, psycho mode. I liked that the big guns that Alfred and Batman had as a backup plan was bringing Lois to him. And Lois was the one, once he recognized her, once he saw her, calmed him down.
And then, straight out of Batman Hush.
Right. And then she hugs him, and they fly away. And the moment on the farm, I'll include this too, because it's all part of it. The moment on the farm when she's with him, the whole line, if you smell good, kind of was stupid. But again, that's a Joss Whedon thing. It was a stupid line. But I got their interactions, you know, were emotionally charged. But I don't know what it is about me that I'm a sucker. I don't know. But the minute his mom comes in, like, she drives up and she gets out of the car and she's going towards her. And she's like, is it really you? And she's sort of like tearing up. And he's like, yeah, mom, it's me. And he's smiling and he hugs her. You know, I had tears in my eyes. I was crying like a baby. Again, I don't know why these superhero movies are going to make me cry for. I'm getting, you know, I said it in the Wonder Woman review. I can only excuse allergies for so long. You know, when Aquaman comes on December and it's negative whatever degrees, if there's a scene in there that makes me cry, what am I going to say? So, but yeah, I mean, you know, shows how important Martha is to the whole friggin' thing. And I like that there was carryover. And then the finale, and then you each can talk about these things. What I loved about the finale, look, it was a CGI fest at the end, okay? There's no sugarcoating that. It kind of had to be. I wish it was a little crisper, but with their time constraints, it is what it is. But two things I loved. I loved that Cyborg was taking point in the finale with breaking up the mother box, and Superman was going along with Cyborg's plan. Like, it's not that Superman came in and says, all right, I'm in charge now. So I love that they kept that dynamic intact. I also love the fact that It took Superman to beat Steppenwolf. Because Steppenwolf was overpowering everybody. And then Superman comes in and just lets loose on him. And I love this because it underscores that Superman, without Superman, there wouldn't have been no League at the end. So Sam mentioned that his power set was wonky, but I think they did that on purpose.
Okay. Yeah.
To show how important and, you know, how much the team needs Superman. And the other part I liked was the fact that after he beat the shit out of Steppenwolf with his super hearing, he hears that civilians are in trouble and he goes and they show him saving that whole, you know, flat of where the civilians were. That was cool. So talk about all that in whatever way you want. Sam, go ahead.
Okay. The fight with Superman and right after he comes back in the Justice League,
yeah.
When he gives that look to Flash, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Just like, like you said, the oh shit moment. Yeah. That was fantastic. And then when he has Batman in his hand, by the throat, or by his face, actually, and he says, "Do you bleed?" And then just when Lois shows up, he just drops him like a rag doll on the ground. And then Batman is like, something like, "Yeah, I think I'm bleeding." It's just when he's on the ground.
See, Batman's line, I didn't like. I thought it was too overboard, but I get it.
Did you think it was overboard? I just thought it was just funny in the context of, like, yeah, I do bleed.
I'm with you, Sam. I've heard that line get a lot of flack, but it cracked me up too.
But it was just so funny because, in the sense, in Batman vs. Superman, when he says it to Superman, he says it very condescendingly and very, like, with hatred behind it. And with this, like, Superman, like, does the same thing, but it's like Superman's like, "I owe you," after, yeah, like, dropping a sink on the back of my head in Batman vs. Superman. Yeah, so
that's fair.
So it was kind of like a little bit of a payoff for Superman, I thought. And then when Lois shows up and, like, jogs his memory, and, like, the stuff with Martha, when Martha comes running to him and he's like, "Mom, it's me," that was very emotional. I thought that was a great, great moment. What else was there? Then the finale with Steppenwolf, when, like, I agree with you, Adam, that Superman didn't come in and he had that great line. He goes, "I believe in justice," and then he just punches him. That was great.
That line was terrible. That might have been my least favorite line in the movie. I'm sorry. That line was so cheesy. It was like a line made for everybody who complained about Man of Steel and BVS that they didn't beat Christopher Reeve Superman.
I will give Jordan.
You know what?
Point.
I love that they used the John Williams theme. I'm sorry. This is, and Adam, like, we've talked about this. Man of Steel, BVS, he was still discovering who he was. He comes back from the dead. This is the fully realized Superman now. You know, this is the full-fledged Superman. And to use that John Williams theme was a great payoff. I thought, we love the Man of Steel stuff. I love the Man of Steel score. But you know what? It was nice that they used it. They didn't overly use it.
Sam's dog agrees with him, by the way, folks.
Sorry, the dogs love the John Williams theme. So.
It's all good.
No, but here's what I'll say. I think the Hans Zimmer Man of Steel score should have been used in the scout ship for the resurrection portion.
Oh, like the Krypton?
Yes.
The Krypton themes? Yes. Been,
yeah, and
it was used for a second.
Yeah. But it should have been used more, and then in the field. Yeah. And then in the field with his mother.
Okay, right. That's what I was about to say, Adam. That scene, you said that it made you tear up. It would have made me tear up had they used that theme from Man of Steel.
But then when he's beating on Steppenwolf, the Man of the
Superman
song is perfect.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it would have bothered.
There could have been a balance of the two, is what I'm saying.
Sure, yeah. Sure, but it wasn't a balance is the problem. Like,
I understand.
Preferably, I would have been happy with just the Zimmer theme. But I would have been okay if they had done a balance. But it's the fact that they only use the Zimmer theme once in the whole movie that I just, it's a travesty.
And that's a fair complaint. It really is. And in terms of the line, I was okay with it. I was just happy to see Superman back and in full.
Right.
That we actually got to see him kicking some villain ass, which is what I was happy about. And then the cool thing with the ending was that, you know, they have that moment when they're all standing together, that one shot. But the ending, I thought, like Sam mentioned at the beginning, really sets each character off in their new path. Like you have Gordon, by the way, it's too little to mention, but his brief scenes, I hope J.K. Simmons sticks around as Gordon or is kept as Gordon, because I think he's perfect. And even in two small scenes, I'm ready for more J.K. Simmons Gordon. Suck it, Spider-Man. He's no J.J. Jameson anymore. That was cool. But each of those little scenes set them off. So you have, you know, Batman looking at the bat signal and the bat wing is hovering above. You have Flash goes to the jail, SL, and says to his father, I got in, I'm a CSI now. And he's, you know, he said that a friend pulled some strings. I'm assuming it's Batman. And I hope to God, if Flash does get a movie, be it Flashpoint or otherwise, we don't have Iris at the CCPD saying, we are the crime lab, or whatever the hell she's going to say. You know, Wonder Woman, I can't remember what was her ending scene? Oh, she stopped the robbery at a museum. And she was actually out and about with people, which is something that she would save people, but she would never make herself be seen. So she's now coming into the light. Cyborg has that moment at Star Labs with his dad, where he gets the upgraded armor, right? The classic Cyborg armor. Aquaman heads off towards Atlantis, right? He swims away. And Superman has a scene that, you know, I'll let Sam take the Superman scene because Sam loves this iconic moment.
Oh, my God. What was the Superman? Oh, with, was it?
The ending, the first. Very end, in Metropolis, when he's Clark Kent. And then.
Oh, God, yes. You know what? Sitting there, I teared up because that's what I wanted to see.
All right, I cry with his mother. And Sam cries when he.
I'm sorry. At the end of Man of Steel, that's what I wanted to see. What was that?
I said I cry when Superman's with his mother, and you cry with, and you cry when he gets undressed. I'm concerned.
But Adam, that is such an iconic moment. It is quintessentially Superman in that moment. Like, that is the fully realized Superman then. Like, you know, he knows what his place is now. Like, it's the full circle from Man of Steel to BVS to this. Like, these three films is Superman's arc as a character. And that's how I felt. Like, when I saw that and I saw him go down the alleyway and do the shirt rip, I was like, wow. Like, you know when you said, like, Henry Cavill could potentially be the greatest Superman on film?
Yep.
In that moment, he could. He still could. There is a movie, and what we talked about earlier, right. He has one more option, one more film
there's
on
a
his contract.
There's a question about it. Save it for the question, Sam.
But, we'll save it for the question.
Save it for the question.
But in that moment, like, I just wanted to yell out when I was in the theater, like, that's my Superman. That's what I wanted to see the entire time, you know?
Yeah. No, okay.
But great moment.
So here's what we'll do. Give final thoughts and your rating, and then we'll get to a couple of the questions. So, Sam, I told you about our rating system before.
Uh-huh.
So give us final thought on the film and a rating out of 10.
Okay. It was a fun film. They nailed the character interactions. They nailed our anticipation for what's to come. We want to see more from these characters after this film, which I couldn't say for Man of Steel. Man of Steel.
BVS.
I couldn't say the same for BVS.
Okay.
Coming out of BVS because it was so dark. the rewatchability on this is amazing. You can watch it over and over and have a fun time each time. Even the pacing, even with the problems, the pacing issues, the editing issues, that aside, it's a fun movie. And all this unnecessary bashing of it, like, it's just a good time. That's how I would characterize it. Is the villain is weak. The story is very paint by the numbers, but in a good way. You could follow it and understand what's going on. Whereas, like, with Batman versus Superman, it's so complex. You have to, like, it's like keeping a scorecard with that movie. Yeah. So, but yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. It was very, very entertaining. And the people that I was with that were seeing this movie, we're all Marvel fans, and I turned to him and I was like, "What did you guys think? We loved it. We got a kick out of it." So,
Sam, can I make a suggestion of the people you saw the movie with?
Yeah.
Get better friends. It was my brother
and my cousin who are Marvel.
Use the excuse that you're adopted, like Thor does, and that'll work. So, what would you rate the film? Remember,
keep my
score, our special scoring.
Your special scoring.
Yeah.
Okay, so I would put it at 7 mother boxes out of 10.
I thought you were going to say that's something. When you said mother, I thought
mother boxes. The mother. No,
so 7 mother boxes out of 10.
Yes.
Okay, Jordan, you're up. Final thoughts and then the score.
All right. Yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to bring up, because you brought it
if
up.
It's Lana. No, go ahead.
No, it's not Lana. About Gordon, actually, you brought up that you liked what you saw of him, and I did too. I really felt like we got a better sense of Gotham in this movie than we did in BVS. Like, it started with that scene with the parody, and I forgot to mention that. Like, when Batman was sort of like grabbing it and it was sort of flying around, you saw a lot of shots of the city, and it really looked cool. And then we saw later on with Gordon, and this is just, I didn't look in the credits to see if this guy was actually named, but I think this guy might be Crispus Allen, the guy that Gordon has talked.
You're right.
Was it? It was listed as Crispus Allen in the credits?
From what I could see, yeah.
Okay, awesome. That makes me really excited then. So I love that. Like, I love seeing the Chief there. Basically, what I'm trying to say is I cannot wait to see more of, you know, this Batman universe. And because I really love, you know, BVS, I felt like, I mean, Gordon was in that movie. I felt like they didn't really give the city a feel in that movie so much. But here, I felt like we really got that even in just a little bit of time. So I'm really excited for more of that. So I just wanted to bring up that I love that stuff. I also want to bring hashtag Tom Welling did it better with regards to the last...
Oh, good God.
Oh, no. You know that was a Walmart shirt?
All right, enough, Ralph.
Come on.
We're not getting into that bullshit right now. Let's keep going. Listen, you can get your Smallville heart out of the way when we have Steven on. Focus on Justice League. Final thoughts and rating. What's the score?
Hey, one of Steven's questions is about Smallville, so I'm about to get more Smallville talk in a second.
Oh, no.
So.
I'm going to have a talk with him privately. You get him to straight up. Let's go. Come on.
Okay, my bad. Okay, as much as I love Tim's rating system, I realize it's more natural for me to do the letter grades, okay, so that's what I'm going to
do. I'm going to do Tim's version because I like it.
And it's awesome. No, I love that version. So definitely.
And I got a good one. Go ahead.
For me, it's more natural to do it this way. Yeah, but okay. Yeah. I mean, like, this film, plain and simple, was a dream come true. It really was. Waiting nearly my whole life to see a live action Justice League movie. I remember how bummed I was when Justice League Mortal didn't come to fruition, and you know, I didn't know when we were ever gonna get this, and you know, we finally did. It's here, and it's awesome. And I had a grin on my face for nearly the entire 2 hours seeing this movie for the first time. Do I have my issues with it? Yeah. But overall, like, I can get past a lot of them just because it's such an entertaining film. For me, it's an A-.
All right. Fair enough. Look, I'll say it plain and simple. Watching Justice League is like reading a Justice League comic or an episode of the animated series come to life. It's fun. it's a lot truer to the overall message and tone of the DC Comics, especially with Rebirth. And it has more, and you, again, I'll say it again, so people don't freak out when I say this. I thought Man of Steel was a masterpiece. I enjoyed Batman vs. Superman. But Justice League has infinitely more rewatchability than either of those two films. Now, Man of Steel, I think, is a better overall film. I think to an extent, because I love Dark Knight Returns and Death of Superman storylines, I'll say the same about BVS. But I got to give this film 7.5 Henry Cavill porn mustaches out of 10.
We didn't talk about the post-credit scenes, guys.
Yeah, we're not going to spoil those. We'll pick those up later on. There are going to be people that are very sensitive about that. And I know by the time you hear this, a lot of people have seen this. But I want people to get that experience before we talk about them. So here's what we'll do.
Press the spoiler wall, though.
I know, but it's the end credit. And it's likely the only two we're going to get in the DCEU. So let people have it. So here's what you do. Steven, you're listening. I know you are. Ask us a question after you hear this podcast about our thoughts on the post-credit sequence, and we'll get to them back then. Fair enough?
I'd say fair enough.
Okay.
Here's all I'm going to say because it's non-spoilery. All
right, fair enough.
The latter of the two might be the best post-credit scene I've ever seen in a movie, and that's all I'm going to
say. I'll agree with that, Sam. You agree with that?
Yeah, I'd say so.
All right.
And
the middle one is fun, too.
It was fun.
It's a classic comic book moment come to life. Mm-hmm. But, Steven, ask us that question again after you listen to this podcast, and we'll bring it up in more detail. All right, since we mentioned Steven, a couple of his quick questions. You know what? Do the questions he had for the Justice League one today, and we'll carry over his other questions to next week.
So answer the new ones now and the old ones.
Yes.
Okay, can we do one of the old ones, Adam, please?
Fine, because I know why you want to do this. It's small, very related. Again, see what I have to work. I'm working with children, people. Quote Gal Gadot, you know. Gal, come and save me, please. Fly up here and save me.
Okay, by the way, yes.
If Gal Gadot comes to my door, I'm done. I'm out. Go on, continue.
Well, it's only fair because you made me shut up about Smallville earlier, so you know it's only.
You mentioned every guest Smallville. Go ahead. What's the question?
Okay, here's Steven's question. If you could have had only one guest star on Smallville, would you have rather had Diana or Bruce?
Ooh.
Oh, this is tough.
Well, wait a minute. Wasn't Adam Knight the kid that they brought back from the dead? Wasn't that supposed to originally be Bruce Wayne?
Originally,
like his storyline.
Originally, that was their idea, but then they lost the ability to do that because of Batman Begins coming out, so they couldn't do that. So look, for that reason, I'll say Batman, and also because I got to see Erica Durance in a Wonder Woman costume, right. So I'm good. So I'll say Bruce Wayne. Sam?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, if that's what they were going to do, like something similar with Bruce Wayne in there, I just would love to see what his interaction would have been with Lex. That would have been cool. All
right.
Bruce and Lex, and how they like talk to each other. Like, I think that would have been cool. So yeah, I'd go with Bruce. I'd say Bruce.
Okay, Jordan, who do you out of the two? And don't say the entire DC universe. Stick to one of the two. Let's go.
First off, I'll say to Sam, I wonder if it would have been similar to Oliver's dynamic with Lex.
Yeah.
It's really interesting, the show. So and Oliver sort of filled a similar role in some ways on the show to Bruce. So I'd imagine been. So I wonder if that would have carried over. But anyway, this is an easy question for me. It's Bruce hands down. And I mean, that's just because Bruce is my favorite DC character. So, I mean, that's no disrespect to Diana, but it's not really a question for me. I'm a Batman guy. Yeah. What I will say is you saw both of them in the season 11 comics, and I think that they did a phenomenal job with both of them once they finally got to them.
Yeah, Steve, I do read the comics. Why are you asking us this question? They already had them in the books. Don't you read the comics? I'm kidding. We appreciate the question, but really.
Yes, Steve. No, seriously, in all honesty, Stephen, thank you. Hey, ask Smallville questions every time, and I will be the happiest person ever. Because, yes, absolutely, Stephen. This is
Stephen, awesome. The pain? Look, what? You see the pain you put me through every time you ask a Smallville question?
This is the only one he's asked, I think, so far.
Okay, what's the next question?
But,
let's go.
Hold on. All I was going to say was, I wonder how much, like, if we had seen them on the show itself during the 10th season, I wonder how similar it would have been to what we eventually got in the season 11 comics.
That's a good question, because the creator of the show, where the, you know, the executive, the showrunners changed. So who knows?
Yeah, all the season 11 comics were written by Brian Q. Miller.
Yeah, and he was one of the execs later on, right?
I believe so. I know he wrote a lot of episodes of the show.
Yeah, whereas Al Ghul and Miles Miller was for the first five seasons. So
yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah. But yeah. Bruce Wayne, all three.
Yeah.
All right, next
it's interesting to think about, definitely.
Next question.
All right. Let's go. Now moving on. Okay. Yeah, this one's not a Smallville question. Okay. One. This question is about the post credit scene.
What's the question?
So are we good to talk about it now?
Since he asked about it already, let's talk about what's the question.
Okay, so spoilers for the post credit scene.
Folks, if we spoil the post credit sequence, blame Steven. Go ahead.
If they do a Justice League 2, who would you want to join the two in the final post credit scene in quote unquote their league?
Well, he didn't really spoil it.
No, but we are, if we talk about this.
All right, fine. So at the end of the... Okay, here it is. I'll do it really quickly. The first post-credit scene is the Flash and Superman setting up for a race. They take off, and then it ends. So you don't see who wins. There. Still a great moment. It mimics the cover of one of the I don't know if it was a Superman issue or a Flash issue, but whatever the cover was, it mimics that cover. It's cool. The second post-credit sequence is in Arkham Asylum. The guard is telling Lex, he opens the door, so he's telling Lex to get up and face the wall or whatever. And then he turns, or he's telling Lex to get out of his cell. Lex is not responding. He turns around. It's not Lex, it's like somebody else, and he's laughing hysterically. Cuts to a yacht, right? Approaching that yacht is another small boat from the camera's facing the back of this individual. This individual walks up the steps of the yacht. Lex Luthor is there, and it's classic Lex Luthor in a suit, bald head. It's not that, you know, hipster T-shirt, basketball playing Lex Luthor. It's full-on bald Jesse Eisenberg with a suit and all that. And he basically, he's talking to Deathstroke, Slade Wilson. And Slade Wilson's in full costume. Lex is talking about, he asks him if he wants a drink because he's celebrating the rebirth of God, obviously referencing the lines that he spotted in Batman vs. Superman. Slade says, "You better not be wasting my time." Takes off the helmet. It's Joe Manganiello, but in full Deathstroke mode. So he's got the gray hair, the gray beard, the eye patch. And Lex says, "You know, him and his friends are starting a league. Maybe we should start a league of our own." And that's how it ends. So there you go. We spoiled it. Thanks, Steven. all right. Answering your question, who do you want to see in the Legion of Doom, Injustice League, whatever the hell they call the team, if we ever get a JL2, thank you, Kevin Sugiura. What the hell is it? Who do we want in the movie, if there is a movie? Who do we want? Justice League versus Injustice.
Okay.
Who's your pick? If you had to pick one.
Grodd. I want Grodd in there.
Okay.
Because because even Barry says it in Justice League, I'm fluent in gorilla sign language, if you caught
yes,
that
line. Yes, that's right. I did catch that. Good point.
So Grodd's got to be there. I would love to see Grodd there.
Okay.
Do I have to pick another one?
No, this one is fine.
Oh, okay. That's good. I'm going to stick with Grodd.
All right. Jordan, your top choice.
Okay. Well, this is sort of based on my speculation of what was actually what we actually saw in that post-credit scene. So when they did the very Killing Joke-esque reveal where it turned out that it was an impersonator, that was Luther, I mean, I started speculating the fact that he was laughing hysterically, maybe he was on Joker Venom. And so perhaps Joker is also part of their Injustice League that they seem to be putting together. So I'm going to say I'd love to see Jared Leto's Joker as part of this, joining Lex and Deathstroke.
Okay. Cool. I'm down for more Jared Leto.
And I will say, I mentioned earlier on the show how the Batman scene at the beginning of Justice League was one of the two times in the movie that I had to contain myself from screaming. Yes. This was the second. This post-credit scene.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. And then Steven's second question. Wait, are you ready to move on to that?
Hold on. I didn't make my pick.
My bad, Adam.
What's wrong with you? You're telling me to answer small girl questions. At least let me answer the question I want to answer. I said it before. I'll say it again. She's probably going to show up in Wonder Woman 2. Cheetah.
Hey, I'm down.
All right. What's
Can I say Bizarro? Bizarro.
Yeah, all right. Well, sure. Why not?
Hey, I'm down for that, too. Okay, so now for Steven's second question. Henry Cavill has said he is...
third, but all right.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. It was his second from the ones for the Justice League.
This is the last question, then, right?
For this yes, this, right. this is the last
last
one.
Make it a good one. Steven, it better be a good one. I didn't screen these. So it better be a good one.
And then we'll move the next two, Steven. Like we said, we'll move the other two that you sent. We'll move that to the next episode.
Right.
So, all right. So this is the question. Henry Cavill has said that he's contracted to one more Superman, and also that he and Joss Whedon have had some talks about the character. He said they agreed on the take of the character, which makes me think, Whedon for the next Superman? I know it's possible we don't get one, but I think that given that Superman is one of the most well-received aspects of JL, it's possible he could actually get a movie still.
All right, Sam, what do you think? Joss, if Henry Cavill survives whatever Warner Brothers is going to do next, thanks to Kevin Sujihara.
It's funny it's funny because I posed the same, very same question to our buddy Mark Hughes at Forbes. Interested in the financial aspect, almost like a Dark Knight, because we've never had a Superman movie that is both critically and financially successful at the box office. So I said to him, But what would that entail, a modern day Superman movie that is both financially and critically successful? His words to me, a Patty Jenkins directed Superman movie with a Geoff Johns script. Or like what we were talking off air, me and you, Adam, either Josh Whedon directing with a Geoff Johns script and Patty Jenkins producing. That'd be fantastic. So, I mean, I like that idea, and I like what Josh did with Superman and Justice League. He got him to the Superman we all know and love from the comics. There was a little bit of blend of Christopher Reeve in there, but yet it was still Henry Cavill's Superman from Man of Steel and BVS, just more fully realized for what the as Superman that we know. So
it's a yes?
I would say yeah, why not? Why not?
Okay, well, here's my take. Steven, thank you, first of all, for acknowledging the possibility that, as unfortunate as it may be, we'll never know the answer to your two questions, or two of the three. We do actually all three because it's Smallville, off the air. Way to go, Steven. You answered. You've given us questions we can't really answer, or that no matter what our answer is, it won't matter. But, or it might not matter. Irregardless, whether the next Superman stars Henry Cavill, I hope it does, or not. if Warner Brothers decides to just let that option lapse and quote unquote reboot, here's what I would do. Yeah, look, you know, people are throwing Joss Whedon under the bus for what's happening to this movie, you know, critically and financially. But there's no, again, I already went on my diatribe. There's only one person to blame. That's Warner Brothers. But it's not Joss Whedon's fault. It's not Zack Snyder's fault. It's not anybody's fault. So, but one of the positives from even the critics that whipped this thing like a dead horse, they said that, you know, Superman, they're all raving about Superman. Even, you know, audiences, critics, they're all raving about Superman. And given the CGI facial thing, it's pretty obvious, even though it wasn't as noticeable in the other scenes. I'm going to say a good 75 to 85% of Superman's scenes were from Whedon. So if he's coming off that well received, then I would say, hell yes, I would be down for a movie, you know, hopefully starring a Henry Cavill. But even if it's a new Superman, I would be on board with Joss Whedon directing for sure. And also, I like the idea of Patty Jenkins. I like Mark Hughes' suggestion of Patty Jenkins. And but you know, Geoff Johns definitely has to be involved on the writing side. And whether it's Man of Steel 2 or rebooted Superman, may I suggest the Geoff Johns run with Brainiac, where, you know, and it was also the, what was the name of that animated movie, Jordan? The Superman one.
Superman Unbound?
Yeah, that's it. That was based off of Geoff Johns.
That was really good.
Can we have something like that? And if it is a reboot, here's what I'll caution. If Warner Brothers does the reboot, please don't give us a blow-by-blow account of Krypton again. Pun not intended, because Krypton wasn't. Bring in Brainiac. Have him spew some dialogue about, you know, Kandor and collecting Kandor. And show a vignette during his monologue of Krypton and that. Don't give me a linear blow-by-blow account, because we've seen it. That's my suggestion. But I'd totally be down. I'm going to pray to Rao and whatever fictional being in the DC universe I got to pray to, that it is Henry Cavill. But even if it's not, sure, I'm on board with Joss Whedon directing. And that brings us to a close.
Hey, I didn't answer this one.
Never mind.
Wait, he's going to answer.
He's probably going to say something that directed an episode of... He's probably going to say, get Tom Welling to direct it. Go ahead. What's your answer?
Hey, how did you guess, Adam? Okay, first of all, I just want to say that Man of Steel is... Man of Steel 2, which they better call Man of Tomorrow, because if they don't, it's a huge missed opportunity. But that's one of my most anticipated upcoming DCEU films. However, Joss Whedon, I wouldn't be totally opposed to him directing it or writing and directing it. He wouldn't be anywhere near one of my first choices to direct it. I think I mentioned it a little bit in our review of Justice League this episode, but I just, like I mentioned that one line that really just didn't sit well with me, which is the truth and justice line. I thought it was a terrible line, but, I felt like a lot of Superman's dialogue in this film, there was some stuff that was great. That opening scene, the iPhone video was great, but there was a lot of his dialogue that felt weird to me in this movie. And if that was Whedon, then that gives me a little bit of pause about him. I will say that I agree with you, Adam. Brainiac is my first choice for the villain of the Man of Steel sequel as well. I would love to see him in a live-action movie. Of course, James Marsters did a great job with him on Smallville. But I want to see him in a live-action movie now, too. In terms of who I would prefer to see direct it instead of Whedon, I'm not going to say Tom Welling, although I'd be totally down with that, too, because he directed
dogs,
at least one episode.
The dogs disagree with that Tom Welling idea. Go ahead.
Yeah, they don't like that.
He directed at least one episode of Smallville, and I remember enjoying that, so I'm down with that. But he wouldn't be my first choice. My first choice.
He's not on Warner Brothers' list either. Who's their choice?
my first choice would be Zack Snyder, but that seems very unlikely.
Yeah.
My second choice would be Stephen S. DeKnight, who's another Smallville director, And I think I brought him up before, actually, as somebody I'd like to see direct. Maybe did I say I want to see him direct Justice League 2?
You put it this way. Anybody associated, you have like a yearbook of Smallville alumni, and you, I'm convinced every episode you just pulled names out of a hat to mention.
But, well, he wrote and directed some Smallville episodes, and he did some of my favorite episodes.
Here's what I'll say. I think you're gonna go here, but he is directing the new Pacific Rim.
Yes.
So if that does well at the box office, there may be an outside shot of that one.
And it looks awesome, I might add.
But the Zack Snyder thing is a pipe dream.
Okay. And then I'll throw
Zack Snyder is going to direct Traffic for Warner Brothers next. That's about it. And
I'll throw in one more name.
Okay, who is it?
Joseph Kosinski.
The guy that did that Tom Cruise movie? Oblivion?
Yeah. I love that movie. Did he do
Tron too?
Yeah,
no.
Tron Legacy,
yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he did.
And I think some of the sci-fi elements that he had in Oblivion could work really well, especially with the way they've set up Superman already in the DCEU. And I thought that was a really, really cool film, Oblivion. So
That's an interesting choice, Jordan.
Yeah,
I like that choice.
I gotta give you credit. That Smallville thing and the Zack Snyder, you know, the Tom Welling and the Zack Snyder choices were asinine. But I will say, your last two were intriguing.
I like that movie, Oblivion, too. Yeah, that was.
Yeah, it's good, really right? Good.
Yeah. But listen, I blame Tom Cruise because him and Paramount caused the porn stash gate because they wouldn't let Henry shave. So damn you, Paramount. Right. Damn you, Scientology. I hope they don't come after me. And all right, but hey, those are good. Couple of good choices. Couple of crazy
Thank
talk.
You.
Crazy talk from Jordan, but we're accustomed to that on this show. those are Steven's questions for now. I'm sure he'll fire off another 1,000 smaller questions between now and our next episode.
Hey, keep them coming, Steven.
I hope that people enjoyed this episode. Next time you hear us, we'll be talking about the Arrowverse crossover. We're going to have Sam back. I'm not sure what episode it'll be on. Maybe one of the animated movies. Or something like that, but Sam. Before we say goodbye, if people want to find you on social media and talk about Superboy or
the
Chicago Bears?
The Chicago Bears
or you
Chicago
know your dogs or whatever the hell they want to talk about. With you. The dogs can come on for a full episode. Because I know Jordan's going to want to do the crypto episode in Smallville.
When
we do the crypto episode, we're going to have the dogs on.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, guys, thank you for having me on. It was a lot of fun talking Justice League and my love of Superman on this podcast tonight. So thank you, guys. And if you guys are looking for me on social media, I'm on Twitter, Sam J. Rizzo. At Sam J. Rizzo, I'm sorry. And then on Facebook, it's at Superboy homepage is the Facebook group and page. So just type in Superboy homepage and it's like the first thing that'll pop up. So if you want to stay current on anything going on with that, the 80s and the 90s Superboy TV series, there is a little bit of Smallville too on there for you, Jordan. So if you want to check it out. So
definitely.
So thank you guys for having me on tonight. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Thanks for coming on, man. This was great.
Jordan, where can people find you? Just to talk or
yeah, of course.
Whatever
of course.
They want to do, you yell at you about Lana or
Smallville.
You can all send a circle, sing Kumbaya or how much you love Thirst or whatever. I don't know.
You can find me and we can talk all about Smallville and specifically episode Thirst, especially if you want to. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram. My handle on both is at BatFanJordanV.
All right.
Before we sign off, for the record, my favorite episode of Smallville was Spell.
Why do you have to insult this crazy?
Wait a minute. Who doesn't love who doesn't love Annette O'Toole dancing with some ice cream in her hand?
It's
in
the so funny. It is so funny. I'm with you. I love that episode too. I know that season four in general and that whole crazy witch storyline and all gets a lot of flack. But I, and by the way, that's that episode is written by Stephen S. DeKnight.
And you want him for Man of Steel too? That's good.
All right, guys.
All right, folks, wait a second. If you want to talk to me, if your name is Gal Gadot and you want to save me from this disaster, or if you're Margot Robbie and you plan on leaving your husband and want to run away with me, or if anybody else wants to just talk, it's at Superhero Sci-Fi. And that's it. I hope you enjoy Justice League. If you watched it, if you haven't, shame on you. Give it a chance. And until next time, have a great week and weekend. So long, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.